You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode number 50 of the Fabulous Peltoncast. I'm your co-host Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we are coming to you live from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks.
And we need to crack these beers that we have open right now because a toast is in order.
Okay, let's do it.
So
is the toast to the beers that we have?
It's both to the beers that we have and, well, I'm going to wait.
Oh, right.
Okay, so I'm so excited to drink this beer.
You should be. I think that's a completely reasonable take for you to have. That is not a hot take.
What we have here in front of us is Founders, highly acclaimed KBS. This is, should I read about it first or should I contextualize first?
Contextualize first.
Okay. This is the best beer that we have ever drank on the Peltoncast.
Wow.
Maybe not the best beer that we've drank in our lives because we've both had Pliny the Elder, but this is maybe number two.
And first off, by best, you here mean highest rated.
Highest rated per Beer Advocate's top 250. This comes in as the number 28 beer in the world.
I'm kind of surprised it's that low considering that it has a perfect 100 score.
I mean, a lot of beers have a perfect 100 score.
I thought, what is this, Rate Beer?
So here is what Founders has to say about KBS. What we've got here is an imperial stout brewed with a massive amount of coffee and chocolate.
First off, by the way, this is actually just what the label has to say about it.
Then cave-aged in oak bourbon barrels for an entire year to make sure wonderful bourbon undertones come through in the finish. Makes your taste buds squeal with delight.
I never knew that I wanted my taste buds to squeal with delight, but I suppose I do.
So this is not an easy beer to get. These beers were purchased in one beer at a time increments.
Yes.
You didn't do any of this purchasing.
I did not.
So you owe me big time, but let's consider it a gift, because what we're toasting to today is your birthday.
Indeed it is. Thank you, sir. I guess I don't know if I hadn't had any words prepared for that occasion.
Oh, I think a speech is in order. I'm trying to taste this beer to see if it tastes like a perfect 100.
It's very smooth.
It's smooth for a beer that's almost 12% alcohol.
Right. Yeah, you wouldn't notice it, which is maybe a little dangerous, but
if we were to get this at a bar, it would be served in a snifter.
That's probably true.
Not a 12-ounce bottle. I mean, you'd be getting 8 ounces max.
Also powerful.
I may pass out before the end of this podcast.
Well, why should it be different than any other podcast? Mm. Should we start off by talking about what we did today to celebrate my birthday? You're just going
to... I don't want to give more space to the beer.
Yeah, I don't think the space for the beer makes good podcast material. That's great for the listener.
It's very chocolatey. Would you agree with that chocolatey?
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Man, this is a good beer.
As many stouts are.
Okay, so where we went to celebrate your birthday, as many people saw on Twitter today. Sorry, at least one person.
We went to Lil Woody's, the latest entrant in our search for Seattle's best burger. And as I've said repeatedly, the pre-search favorite for the number one burger in Seattle.
I'm a little fired up today.
Well, because you were wearing the burger hat earlier?
Wearing the burger hat. You were wearing the burger hat. We've got with us the best beer we've ever drank. And we ate today at what is the current leader in the Peltoncast search for Seattle's best burger.
So we both had the Big Woody, which is, you know, your pretty standard burger with bacon.
Yes.
Yeah, you can fill in any time now.
You were describing the burger. Why would you want me to fill in?
Well, I mean, I kind of wanted to go into the rest of the descriptions. We talked about how we rated it.
Okay. So it was the Big Woody, very plain burger, right? There's not a ton going on, but you don't need a ton going on.
I don't think in the past I've had the Big Woody. I'm not even sure what I've had. I need to start writing this down like I have my list of beers.
Yeah, writing down burgers.
Yeah.
I will tell you that there have been times... I've always thought that Lil Woody's was a good burger, right? As you know, I went every single week for a month.
I did. I explained that to our mom who joined us for lunch today, like trying to contextualize for her why we were so excited to go to this place.
To me, the real winner, though, after going there for a month, is the Big Woody. It's the plain burger.
Mm-hmm.
That is what they do best, and it is near... It's very good. I was going to say it's near perfection, but it is a very good burger. There's still room for somebody to come in and to surprise us and beat it, but right now, it has the belt.
All right, well, what did you rate yours?
I rated it a 94.
Okay, I rated mine a 95 to put it 1 point ahead of You Need a Burger, which previously was in the lead. I mean, I think my only
two
real...
2 weeks in a row, you've eaten the best burger in Seattle.
That's true. Well, no, the best burger in the competition so far. I would say, though, that despite being plain, just the first off, a very juicy, flavorful burger patty.
I think that's exploding with flavor is how I would describe it. There's bacon on there. You can taste the bacon, right?
And I actually don't know if I could taste the bacon.
I could definitely taste the bacon. And that's what, to me, pushed it ahead of Zippy's burger. Zippy's is a very good burger. It fell apart. I mean, look, would I have been happy with the secret sauce on this burger? Of course. I mean, it had sauce.
See, I thought that the mayo and ketchup combo, despite its simplicity, really worked here.
But I would have been happy for a secret sauce to dip in as well, because you always want more sauce.
That's fair. My only complaint was that the relish was too pickly, cucumbery for me. And as you know, I do not eat cucumbers.
Wow. And that's what dropped it down from being a perfect 100?
I don't know if that's what dropped it down.
But flavorful, every single bite. The burger tastes good, which is a huge requirement for finding the best burger in Seattle. You want to actually taste the burger. The bacon accented it perfectly. The cheese was perfectly melted. I like the bun there.
The bun's good,
it's a very nice bun. And then on the side,
it's a five-tool burger.
It's a great burger and very strong French fries on the side.
Yes, I'm not as high on the French fries.
You had cheese fries, though, so it's different.
I mean,
all you're doing is tasting cheese.
Which was good, because their fries are pretty similar to Dick's fries, I would say. That they're stringy, kind of greasy.
First off, let's just take a step back here. You're saying you don't like something and then comparing it to Dick's fries?
I don't normally get fries when I go to Dick's.
Oh, my God. What are you talking about?
I don't.
Wow.
First off, more room to eat multiple burgers.
Like, you can fit mini burgers with the fries. I don't ever say, like, oh, I'm not going to get one more burger. I got fries.
I would potentially say that.
What is your normal Dick's order?
My normal Dick's order is... a deluxe and maybe two deluxe and a cheese.
A deluxe, a special, fries, and a sundae.
Yeah, I forgot to throw in a shake in there as well. That would be the complete my order.
I really like the deluxe is the best Dick's burger, right? But I get the special because it's slightly cheaper and makes me feel a little bit better about myself.
See, I think you need something else because of the fact that the deluxe has its one like flavor profile. I don't know if we're talking that much about Dick's here. And then the cheeseburger, and I think the special is in that same vein where it's got the ketchup and the mustard combo as opposed to the secret sauce.
No, it's got the secret sauce, but no cheese.
Okay, then then you need the cheeseburger to like have the contrasting flavor to mix it up a little.
Okay, but Lil Woody's.
The other thing about Lil Woody's, I was disappointed first off. Turns out the Capitol Hill location is not as good as the Ballard location, which was the only one I'd been to previously.
How is it not as good?
Because they don't have nearly as wide an array of shake flavors.
Really?
Yeah, they've got like a couple dozen shake flavors in Ballard, including the Ube shake that is maybe even better than the Big Woody burger.
Really?
Yeah, that
they
good.
They have an Ube shake?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, I didn't know about this.
That is 100% my recommendation to you if you go there.
Well, I'm just not a shake person. I'm not going for the shake. Unless it's In-N-Out Neapolitan shake, I'm not that interested in shakes.
That's reasonable.
But
I am that interested.
I'm in giving them extra credit for playing Future Islands while we were there.
Oh, that is a good point.
I mean, that's huge extra credit.
In your case, yes. I went home and turned down the new album and played it through a couple times.
What do you think?
It's good.
All right.
I mean, I feel like I need to get into it a little more to like really understand which songs I like more. At this point, it was kind of all blending together as background music the first couple times, I would say.
Oh, well,
it was very pleasant background music.
Okay. I look forward to hearing. I wanted a full review on next week's podcast. I've listened to the album probably 50 times.
That sounds about right.
But I'm happy that you like it. And Lil Woody's getting extra credit for it. But the burger was the main thing, and it tasted great.
So a combined 94.5 score for us. That does, in fact, put Lil Woody's comfortably in the lead.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah. It lived up to the hype. The hype was big, but it lived up to it.
It's weird because I go there so often and I never think of it as I am going to potentially the best burger place in Seattle.
Yeah, you should start thinking of it that way.
It's almost like, well, when I worked, let's say that I worked at Seattle Center near Dick's, right? So I had Dick's so available to me, I almost never ate it.
See, I went the opposite direction when I was interned at the Sonic. I ate literally every week.
I almost never ate Dick's, and I honestly regret it now. I think about all the Dick's that I'm missing that I could have had. But you had... we need to figure out where we're going next week.
Yeah, I mean, I made the choice this week because of my birthday, so I guess it's up to you next week.
Okay, I was thinking one of our loyal listeners, Chris, texted me about Blue Moon Burgers.
Mm-hmm.
Asked if we were going there and spoke very highly of it.
Yeah, I had a Blue Moon recommendation when I was talking about this with some friends the other night. So
I'm thinking, you know, let's the stars it. Have aligned. And I'm thinking this is the week for Blue Moon Burgers.
Okay.
Oh, I'm excited. There are so many burgers out there. So Lil Woody's one that I've had a lot. Something that we knew was possibly a favorite. Blue Moon is something that a burger place that I've been to one time ever.
I think I've been twice, two or three times maybe.
It's almost in the unknown category, but it could be a dark horse.
We'll see which dark horse arises is a challenger to Lil Woody's.
That's what I'm excited about it. This is one of the ones that I'm most excited about of all the burger places that we're going to.
Okay.
But so you had... This last weekend, you had some interesting food experiences because you spent most of the week in Portland last week. And potentially, did you rank these?
I did rank my top five Portland restaurants that
there
I went
we
to
go.
Last week. Which is
I don't want to hear anything about basketball.
Which does not cover all of them, sadly. With all due respect to Voodoo Donut.
Wow.
Pine State Biscuits didn't make the cut.
Didn't make the list?
I mean, it was good. I only went there for breakfast. Like, I didn't have,
you
like, the
You only food. Went there for breakfast? Like, what would that be? What else would you have gone there for?
I mean, like, lunch, you could get a little more. I don't know. You could get more of a full experience.
Okay. All right. Only went to a biscuit place for breakfast.
So I was there, went down Wednesday at lunchtime, and stayed there through Saturday night. So I think I had a total of, like, you know, six or seven meals there. Seven or eight, I guess.
Wow. And two, you've already, I mean, I guess Voodoo Donut isn't a meal.
I don't know if I was counting that or not. Anyways, in the top spot, number one.
Oh, let's start at number five.
Okay, number five. At number five, a Fury Ramen.
Mm.
So this is a place I mentioned last week on the pod that Nate Duncan was very excited to go to.
Okay.
Under the pod, Nate Duncan.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Actually, here's a question for the listeners. Would you be interested in another Nate Duncan pod? Nate Duncan talks Portland food with the Fabulous Pelton Brothers.
Yeah, I think I envision it as a Portland food guide. So let us know your thoughts on that one.
Okay.
All right, so a Furia Ramen, it's a Japanese, a highly regarded Japanese restaurant that decided to open up their first U.S. location in Portland.
Really?
Because of the fact that the water is apparently the like closest comparison to what they use in Japan.
Really?
And it's named
after... The water's like New York with the bagels.
Yes. It's named after a Mount of Fury in Japan, and apparently they compared that to Mount Hood being near
really?
Portland.
Hashtag ramen water in Portland.
So yeah, that was probably the best ramen I've ever had, I would say.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, very flavorful. Good broth, good noodles, all around great ramen experience.
Man.
Even though ramen I wouldn't say is my favorite, that's why kind of it ranks this low.
There's nothing better than ramen.
It will be much higher if we do Nate Duncan's rankings, because he went there, I think, three times over the course of the week.
And he was considering the alternative cost of going there versus somewhere else.
He was. All right. In number four, the other Nate Duncan discovery on this list, Han Oak, which is a small, like 20 to 30 seat prefix Korean restaurant.
Prefix?
Yeah. And so it turns out that the chef and owner of this place, John Cho, his brother is a local...
Rich Cho.
No, sadly not. Rich Cho's Burmese. These are Korean.
Okay.
They're Korean. His brother is a local high school basketball coach who traditionally coaches the team of local players that plays against the USA basketball team before the Nike Hoop Summit that I went down there for.
Okay.
So after the game, we had reservations after the game on Friday night. And then after, you know, a little bit after that, he came in with a few other people who were on the coaching staff, and we hung out with them.
Really?
Yeah. So
who else was on the coaching staff?
I mean, it wasn't like...
Anybody would... There's high school basketball
it wasn't
coaches.
Like it was... I mean, Miles Simon was the head coach, but he was not there. And
okay.
We're not quite at that level.
I'm trying to think of, like, who would have been on that team. Luke Jackson, maybe?
Luke Jackson just got passed over for the Portland State job. He was considered the favorite. That's some Portland basketball news for you.
Where is Luke Jackson currently coaching?
I want to say Concordia, something like that. We'll have more in Division III basketball coaching news coming up later in the pod. I am not joking about that.
Really, I was going to say we're going to have a spinoff podcast.
Not joking about that.
Just to talk about Grand Canyon University. Okay.
Oh, let's go. Grand Canyon University is getting referenced.
Wait, what?
Nope. Stay tuned.
Okay. Dude,
anyways. So the chef John Cho was featured last week in Food and Wine magazine as one of the top 10 upcoming chefs in the world. I don't know if it's the world or the country. Well, I wanted to say
in the world. What's just going takes here? Come on.
The disappointing thing was we went on Friday. It was a Friday during Lent, so I couldn't eat any of the meat on the Korean barbecue prefix menu.
Are you kidding me?
It really kind of was devastating.
Don't you think eating food from one of the top 10 upcoming chefs in the world is more important than your religion?
You know, I kind of committed to it by that point. But
were you mocked for this?
No.
Oh, you're lucky I wasn't there.
It was a safe space. What I did have was pretty incredible, including it was like sweet and sour sweet potatoes. Phenomenal. The best sweet potatoes.
You're talking
I've ever
to me about Korean barbecue and you're here talking to me about sweet potatoes?
I'm here talking to you about sweet potatoes and the fried cauliflower.
Fried cauliflower. I know that there was Korean barbecue out there. Look, this is not your number four. This is your number four because of the circumstances.
It's potentially my number four because of circumstances.
But I want to hear what Nate Duncan has to say about this.
You should.
Assuming he's probably not a practicing Catholic.
He is not. He consumed all the meat that we both got in the prefix.
He was very pleased that you are.
Yeah, it worked out well for him. But that mostly speaks to how good the top three are.
Oh, wow.
All right. In number three, Lardo, which is a sandwich shop. There's a location downtown and also on the east side of the river, which is the one we went to. I had been there.
The cooler one.
No, I think the downtown one is probably.
Really?
I don't know. I guess
it, I feel I like I've said maybe. Really like 10,000 times. I haven't been to almost any Portland restaurant, so I'm so excited about hearing about all of them.
So I'd only been there once before the Men in Blazers live show in Portland a few years ago. And like, I didn't really know which sandwich to get. I hadn't probably done enough research and it was fine. Like, I've considered going back there, but for whatever reason, it's just never made the cut. I've always chosen Pine State over it. But what was great about this is we went, Nate and I went with also his podcast partner, Danny LaRue. And between the three of us, we split six sandwiches.
Oh, yes.
Which offered us the opportunity to sample like a large percentage of the menu and figure out what was the best.
I need to be eating more with Nate Duncan.
You really do. It's a great like, experience.
It is such a fabulous Button Brothers thing to get numerous items and split them because you want to try everything.
Exactly.
It's basically like you had a buffet of sandwiches.
And Nate Duncan is like that as well, except that he just eats massive quantities of food because he's 6'6".
Yeah.
It's great. Anyways, I would say that my favorite of these was the pork meatball banh mi.
Okay, that sounds good.
Had a really nice sriracha mayo sauce on it.
Sriracha mayo. It
was very flavorful.
Which, by the way, I mean, what year do you think that somebody had the idea to combine sriracha and mayo?
I have no idea.
That's
on that
the
one.
Best thing about being a modern human being is that sriracha mayo is red, or sriracha is readily available.
Yeah.
This is the perfect world that we live in.
The Korean pork shoulder was also quite good. That was kind of, that had kimchi on it. I'm not a big kimchi guy. So I kind of like, if I could get the Korean pork shoulder meat with the banh mi sandwich,
okay,
I would prefer that. That would have been the pho wrench dip that is served with a bowl, a cup of pho broth to
really?
Dip in. That was pretty good.
Pho wrench dip.
Yeah. And then also the turkey cubano I thought was really good.
Man, I want to eat all those sandwiches right now.
Yeah.
Every time we talk about food, I just want to quit podcasting. Be like, I don't care about these Mariners hot takes. I just want to eat this food.
All
It'd
right.
be a long drive to Portland right
and
now.
And then we're into the classics.
Oh, okay.
In the second spot, Pock Pock.
Okay.
Did not go with the classic sneak this time.
Really?
Because there was no wait whatsoever at 8:30 on a Wednesday night, as it turns out. The wings, so good. The cow soy, not maybe quite the best I've ever had, but still very good.
Is Pock Pock getting worse?
No, I don't think so.
Is that a hot take? I'm trying to make a news story out of this.
Too hot.
Kevin Pelton says Pock Pock's getting slightly worse.
And then coming in the number one spot, despite the fact that I couldn't even eat their chicken when we went, because we also went on Friday, to accommodate Danny, who had to go
you
back.
You couldn't eat the chicken?
You had to go back to the
Bay
Area.
You had chicken and waffles and you didn't eat the chicken?
I didn't get chicken and waffles, no. In number one is Screen Door.
I like to imagine that you still got the chicken and waffles, just like you felt like you needed to, or just got the chicken and had that to go and ate it later.
No, because here's the thing, is that I have always realized going to Screen Door, like, other stuff on the menu is terrific. And I just can't eat it because of the fact that it's not as good as the chicken and waffles. Or sometimes I will mix it up and get the chicken biscuit sandwich.
So it was almost kind of relieving to you.
Yeah, it was freeing. So I got the French toast. I got the French toast and then also the fried oyster po' boy sandwich.
Really?
We got the breakfast option. That's off menu. So you have to request it.
Yeah, they have at least on, you went off menu. You didn't do your classic sneak, but you went off menu.
They have that on the weekend menu, but we asked for them to do it on Friday for us.
Okay, that's not that off menu. That's just on other menu.
It was off menu enough. Anyway, that was really good. So it was still the best of these experiences, even without the chicken.
Wow.
That's how good Screen
Door is. Can you elaborate a little bit more for our listener who may not have been to Screen Door?
Like, even people who have experienced traditional Southern food think that Screen Door fried chicken is the best fried chicken they've ever had.
And what does Screen Door specialize in?
So they specialize in the chicken and waffles, which is three, I guess. Now you can order just one or two pieces of chicken breast if you want.
You can choose how much chicken you want.
You can.
Because really, honestly, it used to be two just always, right?
No, it was three.
It was three. It's a lot of chicken.
A lot of chicken. By the third one, sometimes you're forcing it a little bit.
You have to be there with like four normal people and one Nate Duncan to consume all that chicken.
That's true. It is the most flavorful, juiciest chicken breast you will ever have in your life.
How do they make the chicken that good?
I don't know. It's a mystery.
If they can make chicken that good, why is everybody else not making chicken that good?
That's a great question. Like, I went to Mo'ono on Sunday night for dinner. And, like, their fried chicken is good. It's very good. It's their specialty. It's not even in Screen Door's league.
What are they even doing?
So
chicken and waffles is the thing at the Screen Door.
For sure. And the waffle is really good, too. It's a sweet potato waffle. Yeah. You should... I think everyone needs to try it at least once, is my opinion.
At least once.
Including vegetarians.
Clearly not on a Friday in Lent, though. You think vegetarians should go out of their way to
eat
this?
Well, I've tried it at least once.
That's what I have to say about that. So you think Nate's list would look a little bit different?
I do think so. I think he would probably have Hanok and Afuri higher on that list, even though he is a big fan of Screen Door as well.
Did you see that Salt and Straw is coming to Seattle? Noted ice cream restaurant in Portland.
I did. So I've never been to Salt and Straw location in the wild in Portland.
Yeah. Okay.
Because the lines are so enormously long.
Yes.
Also, the quantity of food I'm usually eating at dinner makes it difficult to eat dessert. But
you somehow made it to Voodoo Donut.
That was for breakfast.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But I have been to the Salt and Straw locations in the Moda Center, where there is, as long as you go, like, not at halftime, not the same kind of line. It's really good.
Do they encourage tasting in the same way at the Moda Center that they would at the normal location?
I mean, like I think they did some tasting, I think, but like I said, I went with the lines relatively short.
Okay. Because that's the reason that I think the line tastes so long at Salt and Straw. They're almost aggressive about you tasting. Huh. It's like if you just go up there and order something, if you just see something on the menu, you're like, I want that or whatever, like goat cheese strawberry ice cream or something. It's Portland. That's what their ice cream is.
Is it?
Yeah. You go up and choose that. They almost frown upon you. They're like, you didn't try anything? Nothing? I've never been in Portland, but I went at South by Southwest. They have a food truck that drove down to Austin last year. And no lines, because people in Austin don't give a shit about Salt and Straw. They don't know what it is.
I think people in Seattle will, in fact, give a shit about
it. Do you know there's a Voodoo Donut in Austin also?
I did not know that.
It's like Austin is like New Portland. Atlanta is Black Portland. Sure. Austin's New Portland.
Yeah.
What is Seattle?
Oh, it's like big city Portland.
Better than Portland. Yeah.
It's like what's the opposite of something light? It's like the
oh yeah, it's full flavored Coors.
Yes,
it's Coors the banquet beer. Portland's Coors Light. Speaking of better than Portland, the Seattle Mariners.
Wait, why?
Because we have a baseball team and they don't.
Okay.
I mean, they're not better than Portland. They're much worse.
But it's time for us to introduce a new segment we'll be doing weekly on the podcast. I think it's going to be a hit. So. Just hold on a second and get ready. Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at ya.
Okay. All right. Okay. You look at me. Look me in the eyes. This team is not a team of winners. The Mariners have put together a team. They care about defense. I don't care about defense. I care about hitting. And they're doing none of it. And I care about winning. And they do no winning whatsoever. You do not blow a 7-run lead in the bottom of the ninth.
I believe technically it was a 6-run lead. They gave up 7 runs.
You don't put together a team unless they can hit. Show me some hitting. I see nothing. Leonis Martin doesn't work. John Segura, traded for him already, already hurt. Mike Zunino, AAA player. Nelson Cruz, the carriage turned back into a pumpkin. The 36-year-old magic is over. But, I have to say, there's one bright spot on this team.
What is that?
There is one person who stands above and beyond, who is a winner. You look at the rest of the pitching staff, they're losers. Felix Hernandez, he's used to losing. He has lost for years. But there is one person. He is a winner. Do you know who I'm talking about? Do I have to speak his name? Do I have to say his name?
Well, I have to double check that I have the right. James Paxton.
No! Yes, but we are talking Clemens, Martinez, Ryan, Paxton.
Are we?
We are talking, look, Lefty Groves' record of 31 wins is the minimum for James Paxton. Here is what we're talking about. Cy Young got it, claimed it. It's over. Cy Young is written. We are talking 32 wins, 0 ERA for the year. He is on track for it, and it's going to happen.
I've always said that when you're on pace something, you're always going to do it because regression to the mean is a myth.
Those are my marriage hot takes.
Do you need a moment after that?
Okay. Collect myself here. Do you have some marriage hot takes also?
I don't. I've watched like... I watched the opener, as we discussed on last week's podcast. That has been the extent of my Mariners watching for this season.
Well, you don't really have to watch that much to really understand what's going on here. I know, and that is the Mariners are bad.
You can just follow did the Mariners win?
So looking quickly, the Mariners playoff odds, I think we discussed this before the year, and they started with pretty solid playoff odds. Now, after 7 games, they currently sit with about a...
8 games, right? They're 2-6 at this point.
They currently sit with about a 20% chance of making the playoffs. If you look at, they are a team that was built around defense, in particular defense in the outfield, and they're not even playing good defense. That's the thing. They're by far the worst hitting team in the league. Everybody, not the AL, right? We're not talking old-fashioned, the league just means the AL. We're talking AL and NL combined. They don't even play good defense. But they're a bad hitting team. They have multiple
back
players.
Into hot takes?
It's the Mariners' hot takes don't end.
You missed a really good opportunity to make a joke about Jean Segura and insurance, which is what Segura translates into.
The one that I thought I missed was it's their 40th anniversary, and in celebration of their 40th anniversary, they're trying to lose almost 100 games again.
That would have been a good one. You can save that for next week. That'll hold.
As a team, they're hitting under 200. They're not really getting on base. They have no slugging at all. Unless James Paxton is pitching, things have gone very badly for them.
This Haniger guy seems to be playing well.
Mitch Haniger's great. I mean, I think, you know, the stats people, when they made the Segura trade this summer, said don't overlook Mitch Haniger. I think a lot of them were even more excited about Mitch Haniger than they were about John Segura, who has played excellent so far. Actually, this injury doesn't seem like it's very severe. He's a day-to-day with a mild hamstring injury.
Really, really too hot a take there.
But at the same time, you look at it across the board. I mean, Mike Zunino, when is it going to happen for Mike Zunino? He hit well at the end of last season. He's a good spring training hitter, but at the same time, he's hitting 190 right now and has not walked on the season.
I have him at 208 after today's game.
Okay, I'm looking at yesterday's stats from FanGraphs.
ESPN Box Scores.
Baseball Reference.
ESPN Box Scores now have the season-long OBP and slug in them. That's crazy.
La-di-da.
The future is amazing.
Wow.
I've never looked at one of them before.
Call me when they have war on these ESPN stats.
All right, that's fair.
Danny Valencia at first base. I mean, basically, he provides no defense, but also hitting under 200.
He's compensating. He provides no defense, but he's compensating with his terrible hitting.
The other hot take that I have is, do you want to know what the second best thing about baseball is, but it being a horrible sport to watch?
What is that?
Is how long it is. I watched the game on Saturday night, and it was not, it didn't go to extra innings. They went to hour 3.5 and didn't even play a bottom of the ninth.
Today's game was really long too, wasn't it?
I was at work the whole time. The best thing about today's game, looking at it, it was nice that the Mariners won, but the best thing about it is that it happened while I was at work, so I didn't have to contend with Mariners traffic.
That's true. No, I guess it was only 2:56. I saw it was like in the bottom of the fifth, 2 hours in.
But what are they going to do with this outfield? I mean, you have Leonis Martin. Is he still hitting under 100?
He is not, no.
Oh, wow.
He is all the way up to 107 now.
I mean, they just can't have a season. I understand that they have good defense in the outfield, but you can't have a season. You can't have a center fielder who's hitting 107.
Are you old enough to remember when, I think it was FX McCrory's, tied the price of some kind of beer to Dave Valley's batting average?
Oh, man.
That he was flirting with hitting under 200?
It's like, even no matter where he got, even those were the olden days when beer was not that expensive.
Well, I think it was cheap beer. I can't remember the exact story.
I would probably drink any beer that was tied to any baseball player's batting average.
Oh, it was Swanee's in Pioneer Square, apparently. Let's see here.
No wonder Swanee's has gone out of business. They're selling beer for like $1.90.
Oh, no. Apparently, Norm's recently was doing it with Sean Figgins' batting average. That's the story I'm looking up here.
Really?
Yeah.
But anyway, across the board, I mean, you have so many players, the entire outfield. Mitch Haniger is the best, whose on-base percentage is at .333. Gerard Dyson's not really getting on base. Leonis Martin is not getting on base. The Mariners just aren't scoring runs. Look, it's been 1 week, though.
That's the thing, is in baseball, like, 1 week tells you so little.
Like, yes.
The average always wins. Regression to the mean always wins, but especially in baseball.
Yes. So, I mean, Kyle Seager has gotten off to a slow start. Am I concerned about Kyle Seager? Obviously not.
Are you at all concerned about Nelson Cruz, given his age?
Maybe a little, I guess.
Like, on a scale of 1 to 10. What are you at, like a 3?
I mean, I said it right there. The carriage turned back into a pumpkin.
You said it. It's
the
true.
The 36-year-old pixie dust is gone for Nelson Cruz. I don't know. I just like that line, and I wanted to say it again. Probably not. It's been 1 week. I'm not concerned about anything. They played a really good team.
All right, we'll check back next week for more Mariners hot takes.
Even hotter.
Dope, man.
Are you going to have some hot takes at some point?
I don't know, maybe. I'm not going to rule it out.
Okay.
Should we talk about the Sounders?
You know what I want to talk about? This is completely unrelated. But I had this insane thought today.
Okay.
And I went to Reddit. By the way, shout out to our friend on the Charlotte Hornets Reddit page, who's a fan of the Pelton cast. If you're listening, much respect to you.
Yeah.
For being a fan of the Charlotte Hornets and listening to the Pelton cast. But also, I went there and I searched for Kevin Pelton, and people are angry at you.
Oh, I'm well aware.
It was just amazing to see. I don't think we have any basketball talk and maybe a little bit of Blazer stuff, but it is amazing to see how much teams that are not in contention care about meaningless awards.
Like, who's third place on the Rookie of the Year ballot?
Yes, and how angry they are at you about those awards.
Yeah, that pretty much comes with the territory.
This is the most angry that I've ever seen people at you, aside from Jason Richardson saying, "Who the hell is Kevin Pelton?" on two occasions. I had the thought, though, that people care so much about awards ballots that you could do, this is the future of ESPN, like Facebook Live where you just read off your awards ballot. You don't even get an awards ballot, right?
No, I don't even have a real ballot.
Everybody, that was funny because the conversation, did you see that conversation where people were like, does Kevin Pelton get an awards ballot? And they're like, oh yeah, definitely. Everybody agreed that you obviously did. They're like, they just got rid of the local TV and radio guys.
I'm not sure I did see that one, no.
Yeah, they just got rid of the local TV and radio guys. Brogdon, this player from the Bucks who I've never heard of.
Malcolm Brogdon.
Was he on your 10 players to watch?
He was not, no. Probably should have. Next year, we're going to go a lot less obscure because I looked it up to see if we should end the season update, and it turns out we shouldn't.
Okay. I wasn't that wrong for not knowing what team any of those players were on.
You should know how the team some of them are on.
But there were a lot of people who were like, Brogdon's definitely going to win Rookie of the Year because Pelton's going to vote for him. they had a lot of stock in that.
They should sell that stock.
But I had the thought that the future of ESPN.com is just like a Facebook Live or something. ESPN Live where you read off your awards ballot and people respond to it in real time angrily.
Okay.
Because people would watch that.
I thought it was me reading the comments from Reddit about what people are saying.
Yeah. You might have to respond to them in real time also. There are a lot of thoughts. It's funny though, half the teams, I was like, for all the people who are angry, there's somebody on the other side who's happy.
Right.
So yeah, that's why
Bucks
I had to look.
Bucks fans are so excited.
That's why I had to go look at the Bucks page. And when I read the I think it was the Sixers, because you didn't vote Dario Saric as Rookie of the Year, and they had a post that was titled "Triggering: Kevin Pelton doesn't vote Dario Saric in his top three."
Yeah, which I'm not okay with because of the fact that that's insensitive.
It's insensitive to you?
No, to people who are legitimately triggered by stuff.
Oh yeah. Like, not, you know, people, Dario Saric being in the Rookie of the Year,
legitimately had like traumatic events happen to them. So I'm not okay with that.
Anyway, I just wanted to recount that I looked at this today and I thought it was a great read. I love hearing people talk bad about you.
So you're recommending that to everyone else who listens to this podcast?
Yeah. But they'll read things equally good and bad. So
that's true.
Yeah. For every person who's angry at Dario Saric, there's a whole group of people on the Bucks page who think that you're a brilliant person for thinking that Brogdon should have won.
I think they said not just brilliant, but also handsome.
Yeah, there was a brilliant and handsome.
Yeah, that was a good one. That one someone also tweeted, so that's why I saw that one. Should we talk about the Sounders?
Let's talk about the Sounders.
So this past weekend, a 1-1 draw, a come-from-ahead 1-1 draw against the San Jose Earthquakes in San Jose. You watched this game. Give me your hot takes.
Don't actually give me your hot takes. They should be playing Wingo Moore. It was kind of a rough viewing for a lot of the match.
Yeah, that's what Twitter made it seem like. Obviously, I wasn't watching this game because I was at the Blazers game that night, watching Damian Lillard score a franchise record 59 points.
I was expecting it to be 180 minutes of no goals, and that's what it looked like for most of the Sounders match.
Yep.
And then finally, Clint Dempsey has a really good free kick right outside of the box that he hits right off the wall, and then Ladero kind of chops into the goal with this amazing goal, and you're like, all right, 3 points out of nowhere.
Yeah, a golazo.
And it really felt like that was it. But I mean, throughout the match.
So is this the inverse of the Montreal match where the Sounders, it seemed like they were definitely going to lose the entire game and then out of nowhere get the draw at the end?
I don't know if I would say that. I don't think that either team looked like they were going to win. Uh-huh. It looked like it was going to be a 0-0 draw. It ended as a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, that's so fair.
I don't think any team left that match feeling good. I don't think any team left the match feeling bad, per se.
It was interesting. I looked at the expected goals in that game on 538, and San Jose had a comfortable edge in terms of both the shots and then the run of play. So was that what you saw watching?
There were some opportunities on both sides. I guess it felt like San Jose maybe dominated the ball a little bit. There were some opportunities. They had real goal-scoring chances.
I mean, it's not like it was like 3-1 or something. It was like 1.6 to 1.1 or something like that.
Yeah, and really, when you look at soccer, overall, with that small of a differential, I don't think it's really noticeable.
So other than Brad Evans, who again did not play coming back from his injury, the Sounders pretty much ran out their preferred 11 in this match, but then they saw Roman Torres leave after 15 minutes with a strained hamstring. Still have not heard any word on his status going forward, but Gustav Svensson came off the bench and replaced him at center back.
I thought Svensson played all right. The ball that Wando scored, I don't know who it went past.
And by the way, what classic Chris Wondolowski to score like a poacher's goal in the 90th minute.
Nobody who I like less than Chris Wondolowski. I mean, there must be some people, but it's hard to think of them. There's nobody in the MLS who I dislike more than Chris Wondolowski.
Well, that's because Landy Donovan's retired.
Even Landy's goals are somewhat legit.
No, he's very skilled.
He'll score a semi-legit goal.
He's just overrated.
I do think that they should be playing Wingo more. Like, the minutes... I saw somebody tweet this, that they would prefer to see Wingo playing the minutes that Alvaro Fernandez is playing.
That's reasonable. I saw Wingo play last week. We didn't talk about this. I went to the Sounders 2
S2 game. Oh, he played for S2? He's good.
He did. He was very noticeably the best player in the pitch on the S2 match. It probably would have been a bad sign if he wasn't.
He, to me, is a game changer for like 20 minutes a game.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
If he's somebody who comes in the 70th minute, he's going to make a difference.
And he's got that pace against a tired back line.
Yes, the pace is really what he has.
Were you surprised? I guess the Sounders were ahead in the late stages. I was a little surprised that they didn't go to Will Bruin at the end of the game.
I thought the subs were very strange in this game.
Well, I mean, obviously Svensson came in because of injuries, which limited your choices a little bit.
But the late subs in this game.
So Fernandez came in, Roldan, I assume, went back to right back, as he's been doing.
Sure. That seems about right.
Okay. That's happened pretty much every match, so I assume that's what happened. This week, the Sounders again playing on Friday, which I like because it means that I can watch this game and not have to skip out on the NBA playoffs. Heading up to Vancouver to take on their I-5 rivals, the Whitecaps, in the first Cascadia Cup clash of the 2017 season.
And Vancouver has not played so strong this year.
Not off to a strong start. 4 points from 5 matches, putting them 10th in the Western Conference out of only expansion Minnesota, which is really bad. Very, very bad. They have allowed 10 goals in their 5 matches, but they have been pretty unlucky in terms of expected goals allowed. They probably shouldn't have given up nearly so many goals. They also probably shouldn't have scored quite as many goals as they have. So still, the combination is not particularly strong. Their normal keeper, David Ustad, had a red card and got suspended for that, which they haven't done particularly well when he's been in there, but that did contribute to some of their problems. They went to a backup keeper in that match, and then he played so poorly, giving up 3 goals, that they went to a third different keeper to start the next match when he was suspended for it. The Whitecaps have also been busy. It had some fixture congestion because they were playing in the CONCACAF Champions League. They lost last week in the semifinals. And then the last note on this game is our old friend Freddie Montero, you'll recall, signed with the Whitecaps this offseason. Brad Evans in particular was incensed about the idea of him playing for a Cascadia rival.
What, with whom?
Huh?
He was incensed with the Sounders for letting him play with the Cascadia.
No, with Montero for agreeing to sign there.
He's just trying to get a job. He's trying to get some checks.
I agree.
This is the MLS. He's probably getting like $56,000.
Also, it's not Portland. Vancouver is not that fierce a rivalry.
He can play. Look, I am going on the record as saying Freddie Montero can play for whoever the hell he wants to play for and whoever will pay him.
I still love Freddie Montero. He's the best. He has started 2 matches for them, come off the bench in each of the other 3, and so far has a goal and an assist in MLS play.
The person who I was thinking of in the last match was Dellum, who came in, whose first name appears to be Lardy Lardy.
He goes by Jordy, I believe.
Jordy, who came in for Dempsey, and I'd previously never heard of, but I was wondering where Wingo was in that moment, because
that was a case of bringing in an extra defender for the last couple of minutes to try to protect the lead. That was not a case of, you know, him being necessarily the best player on the bench.
Okay, I'll accept that.
Yeah.
But Freddie Montero can play for whoever the hell he damn well pleases.
Can we get a hot take on that one?
That's a hot take.
No,
is that Brad Evans thinks he shouldn't play for the Whitecaps. Who's going to sign him?
Well, I think there are several.
Was he a
MLS
designated
teams.
Player for Vancouver?
He might have been. I'm not sure.
And he's coming off the bench?
I'm not entirely sure about that. He had been playing over in China, and I think was one of the players who was pushed out when they limited the number of internationals in that league. All right. Like, should we get to Husky Sports?
Brad Evans should slow his roll.
Okay. I agree.
There's a surprising...
Like, this is the ML... These rivalries only go back, like, 4 years. Let's just chill out on this. Let's let Freddie Montero get paid.
The Sounders rivalry, Sounders-Whitecaps rivalry does technically date back to, I believe, 1974.
It does date back to 2012.
But it dates back to the NASL, whichever year it is.
Do you remember when we went to that Sounders match and there were people that...
From the Vancouver franchise behind
who worked for the Whitecaps and they're studying it? Like, Yeah,
I think probably some lessons from
someday it. Let's sign Freddie Montero.
Yeah, that's probably what they
that's how Canadians sound to me.
Was that a friendly match? Was that the Barcelona match? I don't know. I think it was the next year, but I can't remember for sure anymore. That was a long time ago. A surprising amount of Husky news in the past week, including Husky football, who's busy right now with spring practice, which I don't know if there's any really much to discuss there, except that the young cornerbacks seem to look pretty good. By all accounts.
And that Jake has been somewhat limited.
Yeah, not surprising there. But is first reported today by SI's Pete Tamel and later confirmed by the University of Washington, an extension for Chris Peterson through 2023 that will average $4.875 million and makes him the highest paid coach in the Pac-12.
So college contracts are strange to me.
They are.
Right? And I have two examples. About my nervousness about this, which granted, you have to pay Coach Pete, right? He just went to the college football playoff.
You're nervous about like it being a bad investment?
It's not that I'm nervous about it being a bad investment. It's just that for some reason with Chris Pete, I have this lingering suspicion that we...
No one calls him Chris Pete.
I meant to call him Coach Pete. That this appears 12% alcohol. I have this lingering suspicion that for some reason, whatever it may be, we're probably losing more games. We're not going to think of Coach Pete in the same way that we do right now.
Well, I mean, I'd be
as hard we will in the future.
It'd be hard to think much more of Coach Pete unless he won the national championship. But I'm not too worried about it. I got to be honest.
I think he's got
a pretty good track record.
This is the way it goes with college sports, right? Instead of giving people raises on their current contracts, you just extend the years.
Well, I think also it's a matter of showing stability to recruits and things like that.
Sure, I mean, all these recruits who are signing to play through 2023.
But if you're a 2018 recruit, which is what you're recruiting right now, and the Huskies got a commitment last week from wide receiver slash tight end, possibly Devin Culp, a three-star from Gonzaga Prep, who was previously committed to Oregon.
And I've seen him be reported as a four-star wide receiver.
I think Scout has him four-star. I'm going by ESPN, obviously.
Huskies... Some people on Reddit were like, oh, he knows who pays him. He only uses ESPN stats. What other stats are there? What is he going to use?
I mean,
points per game as reported by like some other website.
I mean, I went through a lot of different stats in my MVP discussion, so I direct them to that. Huskies now three.
They're especially angry about that one.
Now three wide receivers among their seven 2018 commitments. So continuing to focus on upgrading that, although Culp has been listed some places as a tight end. I think he's a little bigger guy, but we'll see where he ends up. Anyways, if you sign as a 2018 recruit and assume you're going to redshirt, that puts you on campus through 2022.
Oh, there we go.
So it's not as crazy as it seems.
Love swaying somebody from Oregon and somebody who is versatile enough to play both positions.
Yeah.
Well, I think this is a very exciting.
Class coming together.
But wait, I wanted to make a point here.
Yeah.
Which was, love Chris Peterson. Love Coach Pete. Chris Pete. That's what I'm calling it.
Chris Pete sounds like the name of a guy who's from the South.
Yeah. The director of inside sales for the Sounders, Chris Pete. I don't know.
That's a weirdly specific reference.
Like he works in inside sales. But
I don't even know about inside sales.
That's just what Chris Pete works in.
Okay.
Anyway, I read his LinkedIn.
Did he have a lot of recommendations?
Enough. The thing that I want to say about extensions through 2023 is two things, twofold. Number one, when I was younger, I had the idea, let's say 2004 or something, I had the idea of making a mixtape of five songs per week that I was listening to that week that I would remember when I looked back on it, I'd be like, oh, those are the songs that I really liked. And I determined at some point that it doesn't make sense to do that because I'm going to always love these songs. Be like, in the future, there's no way that I'm not going to really want to listen to The Clash. It's just like, this is it.
Yeah.
Times will never change. I love these songs and I will never not love these songs. Interpol is the best band of all time.
you like Interpol for a phase?
Oh, I loved Interpol.
I didn't know. I don't remember that.
Oh, man. Turn on the Bright Lights is probably my favorite album for a period of time.
Okay.
When I was a senior in high school. 2003, winter of 2003, Turn on the Bright Lights, winter. Anyway, number two. This is to illustrate that things change. And the fact that we're talking about something through 2023 is a very long period of time. And I understand that's how college coaches go. But the way that we think about Chris Peterson may be different by that time period.
This is what you have to do.
I understand. And the Huskies did it with Lorenzo, too. It's why he's still being paid by the university.
Should have kept him?
But also, I mean, obviously. But also, the other thing was, have you seen these things where people post online, like, the future is female? Yeah. The future is non-binary? Okay. I have this idea where it's, the future is hard to predict.
Oh, that's true.
It's that it's not the future isn't anything that you say it's going to be right now. The future is so unknowable that we just cannot predict what's going to happen in the future.
The future is not screwing up Chris Peterson's contract because you got a good thing going and don't mess with it.
Pay Chris Peterson. But 2023 is a long time from now.
I grant that. Maybe by that point they'll pay college players.
No, I would not count on it. This isn't 2075.
Husky men's basketball, a surprising amount of developments on the men's basketball side. Do you want to start by talking about the Nike Hoop Summit?
Let's hear about it.
Mentioned earlier. So guess who was the best player there? Guess who had...
Why did we fire Lorenzo?
Guess who had an amazing practice on Friday with Brandon Roy looking on. That's right. It was Michael Porter, who, according to our friend Nate Duncan, who has come up so many times during this podcast, had the single best practice of any player he'd ever seen at the Hoop Summit.
But, like, not a lot of good players have played at the Hoop Summit, right?
I mean, only Anthony Davis and Karl Anthony Towns and Nikola Jokic and,
Jokic was part of the Hoop Summit?
No, he was. He had a very disappointing Hoop Summit. It was a big reason he got drafted in the second round.
Really?
Markel Fultz, obviously. Yeah. So those are just some of the guys that have been through there.
Let the record show that I'm sad right now.
Yeah, we got the sigh.
The future is hard to predict, but it's not going to look good for Jen Cohen on this one.
It might in the long term. It's not for the next year because you know who's joining Michael Porter at Missouri? That's right. It's UW's commitment, former UW commitment, Blake Harris.
Really? He committed to Missouri? What is going on?
Yeah. Well, that's neither here nor there, but I think he liked the idea of playing with Michael Porter.
Hinting at something there. Okay, I think Michael Porter's just going because his dad is the coach.
I think he likes the idea of playing with Michael Porter.
Yeah, that's what you're hinting at.
They've got a little talent there. There's still the possibility that Jonte Porter reclassifies now and plays with his brother next year.
Oh my God,
in which
case,
Missouri would have a pretty strong team, it looks like.
I mean, I'm just a Missouri fan, so that's okay.
I kind of do.
Next year, you're going to hear us on the Peltoncast, just Missouri basketball.
Troy Brown was the other Pac-12 guy, I think, who played in the... I'm not sure. I don't think I'm missing anyone. He's going to Oregon. They like to have kind of the local tie in that game so that they can help sell tickets. He was pretty impressive all week, 6'6 with a 6'11 wingspan and can shoot the three, so he should be a nice addition for Oregon, which lost Tyler Dorsey today to the NBA draft.
Good for them.
Presumably at some point we'll still lose Dylan Brooks to the NBA draft as well.
Really happy that they have a replacement for some of their players that led them to the Final Four.
The other interesting piece of news that is not specifically Husky related this week, Ed Haskins, the Garfield coach, joining Ernie Kent's coaching staff at Wazoo.
Really?
Which opens up the Garfield coaching job for Brandon Roy if he wishes to go there.
Do you think he'll go there?
I think it is very likely that he will go there.
Interesting.
Given that it's his alma mater and now that Porter isn't there. And if he goes, I think we'll probably see PJ Fuller, who transferred previously from Garfield to Nathan Hale, go back to Garfield. PJ Fuller, so he participated, I mentioned earlier, the practice squad.
Yeah.
It's like a scrimmage that NBA scouts go and watch, and they play, I think they played three quarters. I don't think they played all four this year. And they put together a team of, it's a lot of local college kids from like Portland State and things like that. Steve Blake played this year.
Luke Jackson played.
Luke Jackson did not play.
He was not chosen.
And then also
overlooked for playing
PJ Fuller played in this game.
Steve Blake played? Wait, what? Yeah. With all these high school players?
I think Steve Blake might be trying to get back in the NBA, and there was a lot of NBA.
So he was trying to ball with some like 18-year-olds?
But PJ Fuller held his own for being 2 years younger than all these best prospects in the country.
Most importantly, how did Steve Blake do?
He did he did fine, but you know, they didn't pass to him enough. He didn't get enough shots.
Steve Blank couldn't get the ball.
Yeah. It was pretty sad.
Oh no. What position is Steve Blank playing? How is he not playing point guard?
He was, but like when he'd give the ball up, he wasn't necessarily getting it back if he was open from three. But Fuller had a very nice reverse dunk.
Not quite playing with Brandon Roy.
There's an outside chance Peyton Pritchard in the past played with that team. And then
Kevin Pritchard's son?
No. No. I talked about that with my friends at the Pacers. I asked them whether he got that a lot. And I guess that people in the Midwest are still not that familiar with Peyton Pritchard. So no.
So not that familiar with Kevin Pritchard.
He went from... I think they're familiar with him. He went from playing on this practice team.
They're good with him.
To on the USA basketball squad is a senior, is one of the top prospects in the country. And there's an outside chance PJ Fuller does the same thing.
Really?
That's not inconceivable.
And he'll commit to Missouri?
Yeah. All right, more Husky news. Noah Dickerson visited Virginia over the weekend.
He's gone. By the way, when people were talking about Noah Dickerson potentially coming back to UW, seeing that he's visiting places like Virginia with probably offers from them, see you later, Noah.
It doesn't look good.
Have a nice career. He ain't coming back.
Would leave the Huskies, as many have noted, with two players over 6'7", I think, on the roster, in terms of Devenir DeRusso, who was sparingly used
pretty
last
solid,
year,
though, right?
And Sam Timmons.
Oh, God.
I think one important thing to note is we should probably look at Matisse Thybulle as a power forward going forward. That's his best spot.
That is not his best spot.
Oh, yeah.
If defense doesn't matter, it's his best spot.
No, spacing matters. It's his best spot. He's the new Bobby Jones.
He played small forward.
No, Bobby Jones played power forward.
Okay.
Next to Mike Jensen.
Okay. Let's just cool out with these Bobby Jones comparisons.
Trey Simmons played small forward.
Let's see. Oh, he's not. Matisse Thybulle isn't playing with anybody who can shoot like Trey Simmons.
Well, Huskies did add a couple of recruits over the weekend. The first two of the Mike Hopkins era, signing first Odegaard Michael Carter III, who was a 2016 grad, spent last year playing for the local Elite Sports Academy, which was kind of like trying to be sort of a prep school on the West Coast in the Seattle area, playing against a variety of schools traveling throughout the country. So he grew during that span up to now 6'5.5". Got combo guard skills. Watching a little tape on him, looked like pretty effortless high school three range. Should be able to shoot the college three.
Almost as good as Michael Porter.
No, not quite that good. Had verbally committed previously to San Francisco, but not signed a letter of intent, so he was available for the Huskies. And then also West Seattle guard Nate Pryor, who's a point guard who had been committed to Cameron Dollar at Seattle U, listed at 6'1", 165. I saw him play. I got to be honest, I can't remember him from that game.
I'm sure you can't.
No, I mean, you know, he was West Seattle's leading scorer, and that was a good team. They gave Nathan Hale a competitive game in the semifinals of the Metro League tournament there. I think good at getting to the basket, good ball handler. Haven't seen the outside shot from him. That's probably going to be the biggest question mark, particularly
not an
in
important thing
this
in college
size.
Basketball, though. Quick question for you.
Yeah?
What have we done?
The last bit of UW men's basketball.
You're talking about, I mean, what do you think this class was ranked before Lorenzo?
Oh, it was
fired?
Ranked number 6. They showed it during the McDonald's All American game.
Often.
Hadn't updated it yet. That was a tough one
They showed it during. It's like when they show Thunder, like Thunder records as Sonics records, just to remind us. They're like, oh yeah, the Thunder went to the NBA championship in 1979. It's like, Anyway.
So the last bit of news, Mike Hopkins has filled out his coaching staff, completed his assistant coaching staff by bringing in Dave Rice, who was formerly the head coach at UNLV, spent last year as an assistant to Eric Musselman at Nevada. And an interesting tie. So in addition to bringing more head coaching experience to the staff, in addition to what Cameron Dollar had at Seattle U, an interesting tie. His brother is the head coach at Bishop Gorman in Nevada, which is a prep school that has a lot of elite talent. Shabazz Muhammad, for example, was there.
Okay. He better be the dad of like a lot of really good players.
He is not. But that'll be a nice tie for the Huskies to the Las Vegas area.
So some Husky women's basketball news this week.
So first off, a really random thing. The US FIBA has added 3-on-3 basketball is a version of basketball. They're trying to kind of like make this like beach volleyball and indoor volleyball kind of thing. for the Olympics potentially down the road. And on the women's side, to encourage more participation, USA Basketball decided that the national championship would include teams from the Pac-12. And the national champions,
oh,
your University of Washington
Huskies. Is in order. It's your birthday, and we're the 3-on-3 national champions.
Yeah, so no seniors in this one. No Kelsey Plum, no Chantel Osoar. So it was a younger roster led by Natalie Romeo, who is the MVP, along with sophomore Deja Strother and freshman Mylone Henson and Amber Melgoza, who beat Oregon. And it's always good to beat Oregon.
Anytime you beat Oregon, it's a good thing.
Yeah, in the final to bring home the 3-on-3 gold medal.
Huge!
In other news, the coaching search presumably continues. We haven't heard much about it.
I mean, obviously it continues. I doubt they've given up on it.
we're not going to pull that position. Well, we have heard Kate Pei, the Stanford associate head coach, was someone we mentioned as a possibility. She also had interviewed at USC and has announced that she will be staying at Stanford. The latest report is that Carl Smesko of Florida Gulf Coast is the favorite at USC. They're going to have that Dunk City connection.
Are you kidding?
So that's what it sounds like.
Wow.
And then also,
wait, who's the USC athletic director right now?
Lynn Swan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Indeed.
Lynn Swan's like, hey, Florida Gulf Coast worked once.
Yeah, let's do it again. In D3 coaching news.
Lynn Swan is actually their athletic director?
I'm pretty sure about
They're like
that.
One step away from hiring OJ. Anyway.
No, that is not true. OJ is still in jail. Don't think he's capable of being an athletic director at the moment.
Okay, anyway.
In D3 women's basketball
Here we
coaching
go.
News.
Finally, I've been waiting
Husky
for this.
Husky legend Lori Payne, who was the head coach at UPS, as we talked about on last week's podcast.
Yes, and I remember that.
Has been named the head coach.
Was she on your list? Of your
she was.
Exceedingly long list of Husky women's coaching candidates?
She was. Has been named the head coach at Northern Arizona University. Also, Nicole Powell, another person who might have been a potential candidate, she was an assistant at Oregon, played for the Storm during her WNBA career briefly, has been named the head coach at Grand Canyon University, which is getting referenced again.
You named so many coaches last week that there's no way that one of these schools didn't come up.
Yeah.
It was like 45 people. If you don't get somebody right from that list of head coaching candidates.
I still don't think I'm that confident getting it right. But
you ran through the head coach at like 120 schools plus top assistants.
Not that many. It was like 8 total. This Thursday is the WNBA draft. Kelsey Plum expected to be the number one pick. It's not a
really?
Sure thing.
Because so, in the past, she was not considered maybe the top player.
So what happened is a couple of the, broke
the all-time scoring record and was clearly the best happen. Player.
But a couple of the players who were contenders for the number one pick were players who had an additional year of eligibility but could have entered. Diamond DeShields of Tennessee and then Kelsey Mitchell of Ohio State. They both decided not to declare and to come back for their senior season.
Really?
So that kind of cleared the path for Plum. She's still not. San Antonio, the Stars, have the number one pick. They don't necessarily need a guard. They drafted a point guard, Mariah Jefferson, from Connecticut last year, who I think was the runner-up to Breanna Stewart in Rookie of the Year voting. So we'll see. But
who has the second pick?
I do not know that off the top
wow.
of my head.
Wow.
I should probably look.
Wow. ESPN analyst Kevin Pelton does not know who has the second pick in the WNBA draft.
I know Dallas has the third and fourth picks. I can tell you that. Chantel Osahor, possible second-round pick. I think more likely third-round pick. We'll see where she ends up
How
going.
How many players are in each round?
12.
Okay. So being a second-round pick is not bad.
No, although it's tough to make a roster if you are drafted in the second round.
Really?
Yeah.
Any thoughts on who the Storm will be drafting? Do they have a first-round pick?
They do not have their first-round pick. As we discussed earlier, they traded it for veteran center Carolyn Swords, and a move that's looking better because of the fact that those players didn't enter the draft. So this is looking like a really weak draft class. So,
is there any chance? There's no chance of Kelsey Plum getting to the Storm.
I wouldn't say no chance, but it's a distinct long shot.
Is there any chance that the Storm trade into a position? What would you have to give up to get the first pick in the WNBA draft?
I don't know, given that this is a relatively weak draft. So,
but like in any other WNBA draft, what does it take to get the first pick? Like, assuming you're the only person who's both on this podcast or listening to this podcast who really understands.
I mean, sometimes an established veteran all-star has been enough to do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do the Storm have a player like that?
Well, Sue Bird, but I don't think they're training her.
Well, they need Kelsey Plum to train under Sue Bird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that,
Subaru
that
has to be a mentor to Kelsey Plum.
Bird and Jewel Lloyd and Brianna Stewart are off limits, and those are probably the three players who would be worth that kind of value on the roster.
Okay. So it would be a very long shot for Kelsey Plum to play in Seattle.
It does seem that way, yeah.
Okay. I'm a little bit sad about this. When we first started talking about the WNBA draft, it felt like there's a chance that Kelsey Plum...
If they were trading up from sixth, it might have been more reasonable to do. But without that pick, it become harder.
Okay. Should we talk about the Seahawks?
Yeah.
We took Seahawks off last week, but quite a bit of... I don't want to call it news, but maybe...
Scuttle?
Yeah. Quite a bit of scuttle for the Seahawks.
Well, I mean, John Schneider's saying on the radio that they considered a Richard Sherman trade or have been interested in it.
Yeah,
That qualifies as news.
Ugh.
What? Okay, this is not good podcasting. You're just holding the microphone against your forehead in dismay. I mean, look, it's a legitimate thing.
I'm in dismay. For most of, let's say, since 2012, we've always said, in Pete and John, we trust, right?
Yeah.
Whatever Pete and John thought was the right thing to do, that was the right thing to do. With the Richard Sherman trade talk, I don't know if I believe that motto.
I mean,
I do
first
not
off,
trust in Pete and John in this
first
scenario.
First off, we don't know how bad it was inside the locker room. We have an idea of how bad it was inside the locker room because we saw Richard Sherman's public comments, and clearly those are a factor in it. It's not just about performance. But the other thing is, I mean, I think there are two ways to think about a Richard Sherman trade. Number one is, from a value standpoint, if you trade a player on a fair market contract for a first-round pick, that is clearly a win from a value standpoint.
Okay.
Undeniably.
Okay.
Like, whoever you draft in the first round, there are ridiculous quotes from, like, front office people where they're like, well, it's a crapshoot whether that player is going to be good. That's true. You know what else is true? That you don't pay them any money because of it. That's why first-round picks are more valuable than players on veteran contracts that are fairly paid. Because you not only get the first-round pick, you also get the player you can go out and sign with that money that you're not spending on them. This is like a thing I spent a lot of time driving home in basketball, and it's true in football,
but
too.
It's not true in this case.
But,
okay.
And I thought our loyal listener Ben B. had a good point about this. The Carolina Panthers 2016 season is an interesting example of what happens when you let a veteran star quarterback go and try to replace him with rookies.
I mean, I don't know if that's a perfect example. Yes, on defense, I suppose.
Yes, I mean, obviously, the offensively, they regressed heavily to the mean last season.
They were a prime regression to the mean candidate.
Yes, but defensively, and in terms of pass defense in particular, they went downhill significantly, and the loss of Josh Norman was the biggest difference defensively, at least until, like, Kuechly got hurt in midseason.
There's just no replacement, though. There's nobody out there. In other years, I would have maybe understood this conversation, but it's not
if
like...
If you had a veteran number two cornerback to step in.
There's nothing there.
Yeah.
There's Jeremy Lain, who clearly is not an outside cornerback, right?
I don't totally agree with that.
I don't, but you don't go into the season feeling confident that Jeremy Lain is a number one cornerback.
No, not at all. No.
And then maybe somebody who you draft, and that's it? Nico Thorpe?
Yeah. I mean, for all the notion of like, oh, the Seahawks can just conjure up cornerbacks like they did with Richard Sherman and Byron Maxwell. Like, A, it turns out that...
they can't.
DeSean Shedd was not that effective as a number two cornerback opposite Sherman.
I mean, DeSean Shedd was fine, but...
He was fine, but it wasn't like you felt good about DeSean Shedd's side of the field, even with Earl Thomas, like, shaded to that side of
Look,
the field.
Look, let me just say that if the Seahawks felt like they could just conjure cornerbacks, they would not have even re-signed Richard Sherman.
That is true.
There is a knowledge and an understanding that Richard Sherman is a special athlete.
Yeah.
And that's why they went out of their way to re-sign him.
And that's why they put up with it, all his off-the-field stuff.
What is his off-the-field stuff? Just complaining? I'm sorry, but like...
Just undermining his coaching staff in public? Just?
Okay. Look, it wasn't the perfect situation. But does it warrant potentially trading Richard Sherman? I understand if the value is that high. Like, let's say that they get maybe a first-round pick and also another pick out of it. Maybe it makes sense.
Or first-round pick an established player.
At no point am I ever going to be pro a Richard Sherman trade, though. There's no player in the team. I mean, obviously, they
I'm
would,
not going to say at no point would I approve. But would, this is not the time with the cornerback position in great flux
yes.
outside.
I guess at no point is wrong because we know that cornerbacks age very quickly.
That is also true.
But they wouldn't trade Russell Wilson. And beyond Russell Wilson, there's no player on the team who I care about more than Richard Sherman.
More than Earl?
Oh, by far. Hmm. When I saw these quotes from John Schneider,
more than Jermaine Kearse.
if John Schneider was like, everything you've heard is true, I'd be like, sayonara. Have fun. Like, maybe we'll move Marcel Reese out to the outside. I was personally affected by John Schneider saying this.
Personally affected? Wow.
I had.
Were you triggered?
Hashtag trigger warning. I know. I had a pain in my stomach when I saw it because I didn't want John Schneider to be speaking those words.
Okay.
I didn't like the way that it happened on either side.
I mean, still a lot of question in terms of the reporting of whether Sherman requested this trade or not. Is Adam Schefter, among others, has reported.
That's what I mean by either side. It's like, we don't know what happened with Sherman, but I don't like John Schneider coming out and saying the rumors are true. I don't like anything about it, and I cannot and
you
will
just,
not.
Part of why you didn't like it is because of the fact that we were wrong in downplaying this possibility.
I don't care at all about being wrong. I've been wrong so many times in my life.
That's true. I've been wrong so many times in just this podcast.
Yeah, I'm wrong about almost everything. I don't care about being wrong. I'm fine with being wrong. If... Like, Reddit almost never talks bad about me, but if they did, I'd be fine with that.
that would be really weird if they did.
But what I'm saying is that I just like Richard Sherman, and I believe that Richard Sherman is one of the top five cornerbacks in the NFL, and there is no logical argument for trading him, at least on the field.
I don't agree that there's no logical argument for trading, but again, I just don't think this is the right time. And I don't think the value is really there.
So I'm very skeptical of that. I guess we'll see, but even still, one of the arguments that I saw was, oh, the window is really tight, so the Seahawks need to trade Richard Sherman. Do you see this argument?
No.
This was from Peter King. He was saying that the window is really small and the rest of the quarterbacks around the NFC West are not that good. Therefore, the window is therefore you can trade Richard Sherman, which it's like, we don't play the playoffs. You don't play other teams throughout the year. They don't have the Packers on the schedule again.
I guess I read Peter King and somehow I didn't quite get it that way. But yes, I don't.
That was your first mistake. But I just don't understand this argument in any way. On the field, the best chance that the Seahawks have to win the Super Bowl in 2017 is to have Richard Sherman on the field.
What percentage odds do you give a Richard Sherman trade? Because I feel like a lot of the debate sometimes comes down to like people trying to translate this into subjective, like, is it a possibility or is it a real possibility? Like, everything can be solved by just using percentage chances.
The fact that John Schneider talked about it publicly on sports radio means that it is a very real chance.
I think the fact that John Schneider talked about it publicly on sports radio means that it's not happening, because if it was happening, you wouldn't need to talk about it. You just do it.
I suppose that's true, but Why does he do it? Why does he alienate Richard Sherman for no reason?
Well, first off, Richard Sherman is well aware of whatever is happening here. I don't feel like there's any alienation happening.
But I guess to answer your question, I think it's probably like a 40% chance.
Really? Because I was going to say 10%.
10%?
Yeah.
John Schneider was gonna went happen. On sports radio and said, everything you've heard is true.
If it was going to happen, it would have already happened by now. I don't see why is some team going to all of a sudden offer more now than they were going to offer last month?
That's true. That basically what the situation is maybe John Schneider wants to trade Richard Sherman, but there's no market for it. Because trading players in the NFL doesn't work. This ain't Boogie Cousins,
and
right?
Because trading players in the NFL rarely happens.
Yes.
As our loyal listener, Ben B, also did a good job of pointing out last week of like all these times that people have talked about Seahawks trades and none of them have come to fruition.
But we don't, those have all been reported by people who are not John Schneider.
True. I mean, this escalated to a different level last week.
I'm very distraught about this.
Distraught?
Yeah, I'm distraught. I really like Richard Sherman.
First off, I don't think it's happening. I mean, I guess you think it's happening. So
I mean, I guess
you think it might be happening. Not.
I think there's a chance of it happening, but I don't even like the insinuation that it could happen. I wanted John Schneider to go on the air and say, "What are you talking about? Maybe you should stop talking about this. Why have you been talking about the story for 3 months? Move on. The Mariners are playing games. Kelsey Plum is the leading scorer in all of college women's college basketball history. Talk about something else.
Also,
but what he did
won
was
every player of the year award. We didn't mention
that. He took every the ridiculous story that sports radio has been pushing for like 3 months and was like, it's all true. Are you kidding me? What is he doing? Why is this a story? I'm very angry about this. I just can't handle it. Look, okay, we should talk about the other thing. Marshawn Lynch, go to Oakland. Have fun. Play in Oakland. I love it.
I mean, Marshawn Lynch, do whatever makes you happy.
I love you, Marshawn Lynch, always and forever.
How do you feel about the idea of Marshawn Lynch playing for the Patriots, though?
Not as favorable, but but it's fine. I don't even care. Marshawn Lynch can do whatever the hell Marshawn Lynch wants. He's like Freddie Montero.
I would like the Patriots a little bit if Marshawn Lynch was playing for them.
Would you?
I've got to be honest about that.
I don't know if I would respond that way, but maybe if the Seahawks trade Richard Sherman and maybe even to the Patriots, if the Seahawks trade Richard Sherman and Marshawn Lynch is a Patriot, I'll just cheer for the Patriots.
The other Seahawks news this week, they signed Cyril Grayson, who ran track at LSU, did not play football there, played it in high school.
He's probably a top five corner in the NFL.
And they've listed him as a wide receiver at 5'9". He ran a 4.33 40 at LSU's pro day, which would have ranked third among wide receivers at the combine and would have had the best 60-yard shuttle of anyone at the combine. He was a 400-meter specialist at LSU, was a member of 7 All-America track teams, which I'm not sure exactly what that means, but that sounds good.
Yeah, he's continue.
Although he was lately recruited as a defensive back out of high school.
He's a practice squad player.
The Seahawks, this is so on brand for the Seahawks to sign someone who didn't play football in college. So on brand. I think they're mostly looking at him as a return specialist. This would be, I don't know if you're even old enough to remember Michael Bates, but Michael Bates 2.0.
Oh, I remember everybody.
Do you? You were like 10 when the Seahawks signed Michael Bates.
You remember them signing Michael Bates?
I guess it would have been.
I remember the day well. I read it on Twitter.
I guess it would have been after the 96
Olympics.
Where'd
he go, Colorado?
He went to Arizona State.
Close enough.
I assume that would have happened after the 96 Olympics. You probably would have been like 11 at that point.
I remember Jawaan Hooker. Does that count for anything?
That does count, yes.
I'm still a little bit frustrated that you're not more upset about the Sherman news.
First off, I don't think it's news.
Okay.
I think it's news. I think it's certainly worth discussing, but I don't think that a trade is actually going to ultimately happen in all likelihood.
Okay. Maybe I'll feel a little bit better because you say that.
I wouldn't take my word for it. Do you want to talk about the Blazers at all?
Not really. We're going to talk about the Blazers next week, right?
Well, they'll be midway through their playoff series
really?
At that point.
Who are they playing?
They're playing the Golden State Warriors.
Has that been confirmed? Have they made the playoffs?
They have made the playoffs.
It's clinched?
It clinched. It was clinched yesterday.
When the cheers is in order.
Yeah, when the Denver Nuggets lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder on Russell Westbrook's 36-foot game-winning three-pointer at the buzzer.
Sent the Blazers to the playoffs?
To give him a 50-point triple-double for his record-breaking 42nd triple-double of the season.
Man.
Also,
I hate that I'm kind of pro that Russell Westbrook play.
Oh, I'm so pro Russell.
I'm secretly pro Russell Westbrook this year.
I mean, he's had an amazing season. You can't deny what he's doing.
That's the thing. That's the
people
thing
on Reddit can deny what he's doing. You can't deny
people on R Rockets. Is there a page R Rockets or is it R Rockets?
I think it's R Rockets.
You know what?
I like your joke though.
It's like, when the Thunder have a chance, a legitimate chance to win the championship, I'm anti-Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. When it's Russell Westbrook on his own, I still kind of love Russell Westbrook like I loved him when he was a player at UCLA. I always liked Russell
Westbrook. I don't remember any opinions about Russell Westbrook at UCLA.
I love him like I loved Kobe Bryant.
Definitely didn't have the opinion that he should be the fourth pick in the draft that Sonics should take him.
One very good pick by Sam Presti. But I love him like I loved Kobe Bryant in the 2006 season.
Which is a reasonable comparison, although, as I've argued on ESPN.com, he's having a better season, clearly, than Kobe's 2005-06.
Nobody's arguing whether it's better or not. It's about being on your own.
Yeah. So anyways, about the Blazers. Without Yusuf Nurkic, they managed to beat Minnesota on Thursday and Utah on Saturday to put themselves in position to clinch with that game winner. Then rested most of their starters on Monday night against the San Antonio Spurs, a game they still ended up winning on a wild play at the end where Shabazz Napier dribbled the ball off Myers Leonard's knee, and it went to Noah Vonleh, who made the game-winning layup against a perplexed San Antonio defense as time expired.
What does Pop have to say about that? Coach of the year!
So the Blazers will finish at worst 500, remarkably, despite as poor as they were, and now kind of all eyes on Yusuf Nurkic's
When is he expected
reevaluation
back?
On, I think it should be Friday is when he'll be reevaluated.
When will the playoffs start?
Either Saturday or Sunday. I think the haven't heard which day they'll play this weekend in Golden State at Oakland. The Blazers aren't going to win this series, realistically. But
which hot takes? Blazers hot takes. Not gonna beat the Warriors.
If they can get Nurkic back, at least for their home games, they can, I think, be competitive and, you know, extend this series beyond four games. Which, given where they were a few weeks ago at the time of the Nurkic trade, a pretty impressive outcome. Damian Lillard's been balling out of control in the second half of the season.
How many games do you think? But did you have Damian Lillard on any of your All-NBA teams?
I did not.
Hater. How many games? How many games?
I mean, you have to take him over Chris Paul, basically.
Never heard of him. Are you at ESPN.com picking the playoff series and how many games are going to go?
I think I will probably go Warriors in five was the outcome of last year's series.
All right, that feels about right. Are you doing that, though?
Am I picking the series?
Have you petitioned? No, I mean, is that a thing that's happening at ESPN.com?
People picking series?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a thing.
Have you petitioned ESPN.com to do percentage chances of game going each amount of games?
I have not, sadly. I really should.
It would be much less exciting, but it would be so much more accurate.
I mean, we actually do a version of that in the ESPN forecast panel.
Really?
So it's not publicly displayed like that, but there is a version of that we do behind the scenes.
Really? Well, maybe you can discuss it here on the podcast.
No. So what's the percentage chance of a sweep versus a five-game series?
Yeah.
I would say about maybe a 40% chance of Warriors in four, 45 of Warriors in five, and about 5% of either Warriors in six or seven.
0% chance. Did you hear Kevin Durant at the end of the podcast when he started eating his food with Bill Simmons?
I did.
That was my favorite part of that podcast. Wait, who was providing him the food? Was he at a restaurant or his personal chef brought him food?
Personal chef. It would be at his house.
When he was like, "I think I'm scared of the Blazers." That was my favorite part of the podcast.
I bet Damian Lillard listened to that part of the podcast. I'll say it like that.
Yeah. Dame Dollar's not scared either. Well, anyway, are you going down to Portland for any of these playoff games?
No, I'll be there for games 3 and 4.
Oh, well, I hope that you get to try some more ramen.
Maybe. In game 6, if necessary.
Maybe you get to try some Korean barbecue, not on a Friday.
Probably not. I think you have to make your reservations well in advance.
So. Really? That far in advance?
Oh, yeah. Especially after they were featured in Food & Wine magazine. Blow up.
I mean, who doesn't read Food & Wine magazine's top 10 chefs of the future?
First off, it's a 20 to 30 seat place. Enough people read it that it'll probably fill up.
Okay. Well,
but it will probably be my last visit of the season to Portland. We'll see if we go over the summer. But you got to kind of hit the classics there. Got to make sure you get them in one last time.
Okay. I look forward to it.
On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.